Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zhang, psychotherapist and the founder of the Awareness Integration Therapy. Hello to Sean in our studio. And let me tell you that this show is about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, feelings, emotions, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. So today I will share the tip of the week about being responsible for clarifying misinterpretations that either we create or others, and really letting them know what's on our mind. I will talk about how to handle your fear about needing to satisfy everyone else's needs, let's say, in the Ask Me segment. And I will share the latest research about frequent cannabis use being associated with a 2-point decline in IQ, especially the verbal IQ. Then I will bring you Amanda Ma, spiritual teacher, a warrior of the heart, sharing a fresh approach to the age-old search for spiritual freedom, and the author of Falling Open in a World Falling Apart. I love to hear from you. Connect with me through my website, fujian.com, or follow any of my social media and YouTube channel and podcast, and message me with your comments and topics of interest. I love to hear from you and ask me questions so I can answer you in the Ask Me segment. But first, here's the tip of the week.
When life is good again, I'll be a better friend, a bigger person when life is good again. More thoughtful than I've been, I'll be so different then, more in the moment when life is good again.
Hey, Dr. Fujian here again, and this is the tip of the week. This week, I've been noticing a lot of miscommunication between people. I've seen it between myself and my clients, couples, family members, and coworkers. This week has brought lots of sensitivities to the surface. When stress is high for people, they tend to be more sensitive. Therefore, their listening might become defensive rather than from an open, heartfelt place. This is a common occurrence. I've had to clean up misinterpretations from how I have come across to my clients and how they have perceived my intention. When I have said something and the interpretation was that I was not caring or listening or don't understand, I needed to make sure that I apologized for coming across in a way that my conversation could be interpreted in a non-caring or harsh way. I also had to ponder about what was going inside me that with all the best intention, my tonality or my words appear harsh to the listener. Thankfully, all miscommunications were cleaned up and reconnection has happened. I'm observing myself to see what and how subconsciously is relaying. What is it that subconscious is relaying to the listener, although what I'm saying appears to be okay? I've also observed couples that have dragged out arguments for weeks based on misinterpretations. One partner states a complaint so that they get heard and hopefully for the matter to get fixed. However, the other partner hears the complaint as an attack or a demeaning sentence and feels angry, enraged, and humiliated. When each person clarifies the meaning of what was said, then the two can begin moving forward with the intended communication. If they don't clarify and just argue, it takes a long time to get out of the defense attack mode. This way, they continue to hurt each other more and more. No one knows what another person is thinking or feeling. At best, we can assume and guess. The problem escalates when we think our assumption and projections are accurate and react accordingly to our personal projections without doing a reality check. You know, I read this quote and I have no idea whose it's from, but I love it and I constantly have it everywhere, which is, between what I think, what I want to say, what I believe I'm saying, what I say, what you want to hear, what you believe you understand, what you want to understand, and what you actually understand, there are at least 9 possibilities of misunderstanding. So when you have said or done something that has hurt someone, and they get the courage to tell you that they're upset, one, listen with compassion. 2, go into their world. 3, see how they have been affected. 4, what did they perceive that hurt them? 5, apologize for what you have done that was perceived as intentional hurt, or that it hurt even though they knew you did not intend to hurt them. 6, let them know what you actually meant to say that was misinterpreted. 7, take responsibility for the way you have stated it that created the misinterpretation. 8, let them know that you would like to reconnect with them and mend the relationship. 9, ask for future ways that the other person likes to be communicated to. And 10, let them know how you would like to be communicated to. This way you minimize future misinterpretations. To have more observational skills and tools for healthier relationships, go to my book, Life Reset, The Awareness Integration Path to Creating the Life You Want. Remember, be responsible for clarifying your communication. You are the only one who knows what you mean.
I'll try to be someone on which you can depend, a helping hand to lend. Let's open up our eyes and see what's going on, if we're to move along from where we've been.
This is the Ask Me segment, and thank you so much for people who are asking the questions. I got this question on Instagram actually today. Says, how can I reduce my fear of keeping others satisfied? There's a part of us that does need to keep everybody satisfied. We want everybody to like us, and that's pretty normal, actually. What we do as far as a human being, it is important for us to be accepted by the herd, because in old days, if we weren't and they were shunning us away, we could not survive. So therefore, in every single human being, there is this desire to be connected to their group and to be accepted, validated. And I think that as we grow up, as we're born, kind of with the first validation that we want is of our parents, and then our siblings, and then extended family, you know, grandpa, grandma, and then our teachers, and then our peers, and then our lover, and then there are society and, you know, the academic group, or if we're in a business, then the, you know, business and our customers, and all of it. That sometimes holds who we are, and it's a reflection back into our identity. And we kind of, it's like a mirror effect, you know, we look at others, and if they like us, then we like ourselves. Well, there's a truth to that, definitely. But there's also, you got to realize, there's 7.5 billion people out there, that if we were going to keep every single person satisfied, it would be impossible. So you need to know what it is that you stand for, the values that you have, the greatness that you have, the strengths that you have, your power within, who you are, and even your vulnerabilities, even the areas that you don't like, even if you can take responsibility about, all right, you know, sometimes I'm late, or there are times that I get jealous, or there are times that I don't want, you know, I get angry and shout out, and there's not like I'm perfect, and that's fine, because as a human being, I don't need to be perfect. And, but there are also a lot of strengths and greatness that I can offer to the community, my relationship. And the point is, if I'm doing the right thing and I'm taking a stand for my values, and I operate from my values. And if other people might not be at the same alignment with me, and I might not necessarily satisfy them, that it's okay. That it's okay that my path and your path might be different. That it's okay that I might think something is okay and you don't, because your taste is different, your ideology is different, the way that you look at things are different. As long as what I do works for me and most people around me and I in my relationships, then I'm going to keep it and I'm going to honor it and I'm going to be proud of who I am. Now, if there's something that I'm worried that you're going to find out about me because I don't like about myself, and I'm kind of ashamed of it, and that's why I don't want you to know because I'm going to be feeling embarrassed, then my suggestion is it's irrelevant whether other people are satisfied or not. It's important that you are. And if there's something that you feel like it should change because you don't want other people to find out, then find out how to change it, how to shift it, how to create something else that you are proud of yourself. So the moral of the story is, if you can be proud of yourself, if you can be satisfied by yourself, if you could honestly look at yourself in the mirror, look at your own eyes and say that the things I do are great and the things that I don't like about myself, I'm working on them and it's okay that those are there and I, you know, I'm shifting it and changing it and moving forward and growing. And it's okay that if you love me the way I am, and it's okay, and I honor you even if you don't like my belief systems or things that don't work for you. If there is something that I can align and negotiate with you that works for me and for you, awesome. But if I have to completely change myself and become a stranger to me and lose who I am because I only have to satisfy you, then again, one of us is not in this relationship and that would be me. And I can't afford to lose me. So be who you are. But be proud of who you are. And if there's anything you're not proud of about who you are, you have the authority and the capacity and the ability to shift it so that you are proud all over. Thank you. Where we've been, let's open up our hearts and let the love shine. Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it. Hello again. This is the latest research. A study has found that adolescents who frequently use cannabis, marijuana, may experience decline in the intelligence quotient, IQ, over time. The findings of the research provide further insight into the harmful neurological and cognitive effects of frequent cannabis user, especially for young people. The paper led by researchers at RCSI University of Medicine and Health Sciences and is published in the Psychological Medicine. The results reveal that there were decline of approximately 2 IQ points over time in those who use cannabis frequently compared to those who didn't use cannabis. Further analysis suggested that this decline in IQ points was primarily related to reduction in verbal IQ. The research involved systematic review and statistical analysis on 7 longitudinal studies involving 808 young people who use cannabis and at least weekly for a minimum of 6 months, and 5,308 young people who did not use cannabis. In order to be included in the analysis, each study had to have a baseline IQ score prior to starting cannabis use and another IQ score at a follow-up. So the young people were followed up until age 18 on average, although one study followed them all the way to age 38. Previous research tells us that young people who use cannabis frequently have worse outcomes in life than their peers and are at increased risk of serious mental illness like schizophrenia or any type of paranoia. Loss of IQ points early in life could have significant effects on performance in school and college and later employment. Now, cannabis use during youth is of greater concern as the developing brain may be particularly susceptible to harm during this period. And we know that the age of usage actually for cannabis is getting younger and younger. So if you're a parent and listening to us, please take this matter seriously with your youth, although it has become a norm and a higher percentage of teens are using it. And if you are a user yourself, be intelligent about it, let's say, and do it in a way that it does not, your life does not get suffered. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
When life is good again, I'll be a better friend. A bigger person when life is good again. More thoughtful than I've been. I'll be so different then. More in the moment when life is good again.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fushan Zain, and I am excited to have Amoda Ma with me. She is a spiritual teacher, a warrior of the heart, sharing a fresh approach to the age-old search for spiritual freedom. Her teaching features timeless truth in ways that are highly relevant and alive to this moment for contemporary seekers willing to go to the raw edge where spirituality meets humanity. I love that, where spirituality meets humanity. And her latest book is Falling Open in a World Falling Apart. That is so true. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course. You talk about openness, being open. And right up front in your book, you write, I invite you to reject nothing, welcome everything, and surrender into the deepest falling of the open heart. Your book is about creating the openness and having the experience of openness. So share with us your journey of how you got to come to the space of what you call openness, and then let's explore what openness is from your perspective.
Mm. Well, let's say right from the start that this openness isn't to do with the personality opening and closing. Yeah, very often when I have these dialogues, there's an idea that, you know, if I feel comfortable, if I feel safe, then I can open. Yeah, people know what that means, what it feels like. But if I feel threatened or if I feel scared, then I close. Well, yes, all of that happens on the surface. But what I'm speaking about or pointing to is an openness that doesn't open or close. It's an openness that is always here. And so it's less about creating the openness and more about recognizing it, recognizing that it's already here. What do I mean by that? I mean, openness is the background of who and what we are. And this is a recognition that can only come about either when we fall open, and we can talk a bit more about that, how that happens, or when we bring our attention to it. It's like turning our attention away from the surface, our surface reactions, and into the deepest. That's why I say it's the deep heart, into the deepest being that's already here. The background state of beingness, the background ground of beingness, the background ground of open awareness that's always here. It's always here. It's who we are. It's what we are prior to any feeling or emotion, prior to any thought, prior to any narrative. It's essentially our true nature. So that's what I'm really pointing to. And whilst that sounds like a lofty spiritual goal, it's actually accessible to every human being. It's a matter of turning attention, turning awareness back towards awareness rather than towards the content of awareness, which is the conventional or mainstream egoic paradigm. Yeah, the ego-centered paradigm is to look at the content of its experience, and then according to whether that content is pleasurable or painful, welcome or unwelcome, will then identify with that content and create its personhood out of that. So what I'm pointing to cuts through all that, and that's the only freedom there is.
You say that the world, inner and outer, these are your words from your book, and it's written beautifully, the world, inner and outer, is always falling apart. When we get right up close and intimate with our experience, we see that every thought is like a drop of rain falling into the ocean. Every feeling is like a brush stroke that fades into the sunset. Every breath is a fleeting whisper, just like a flower bursting into the glory of a temporary bloom. So our individual lives are a temporal blossoming. What are the things that I got from your conversation? And I'm going to say it the way I heard it. And then you can see if I heard it accurately, or you want to explain, you know, and then we could create more of expansion to it. We live in a way that we're constantly obviously faced with triggers that happen internally, whether they're thoughts and emotions, and then things that happen externally that are constantly our life that we deal with. And you're inviting us to go before. There's a state of beforeness, before this information, whether it's inner or outer, shows up. And from that space, look at it as the openness and the inquiring and the excitement of something showing up, and honoring whatever shows up before it even holds the thought or the emotion. Because as I'm hearing you, when you come from that space of openness before, then whatever shows up is as is. There's an acceptance of whatever shows up is as is. One of the pitfalls that we human beings fall into is actually the emotions. So it appears that for us as emotions, if something shows up and it elates us and it's exciting for us and it makes us happy and safe, oh, we're open to it. And then if it's something that makes us fearful, uncomfortable, we automatically close down. So how do we handle the concept of the openness right before it fits the edge of the uncomfortableness, where then we shut down? Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's well explained. Well, that's precisely it. That's what I'm attempting to point to. It's a delicate pointer. We might seemingly open and close in response to what happens, to our experience of what happens, just as you beautifully described. But even when we experience an intense emotion, even when we experience fear or something unwelcome, the question is not whether we like it or dislike it, whether we feel, kind of excited or inspired, or whether we feel, you know, tight and stressed. That's not the question. Because that you cannot really, you cannot control. Yeah, you feel as you feel in response to what happens. Sometimes that's a backlog of conditioning that's happened, where you've been hurt before or abused or fearful. And sometimes it's a very natural, organic response to a threat or something unwelcome, like a loss or a tragedy. That's not the issue. That's not in question. What is in question is whether there is any awareness that awareness is always here, whether we feel good or whether we feel bad, whether we like what's happening or whether we don't like what's happening, whether we are ecstatic or whether we are heartbroken. Is it not true that awareness, aware presence, open awareness, the very fact of awareness, the very fact that I can experience this or this or this or this, the ever-changing thisness of life, the very fact that I can experience it means that there is a backdrop of awareness, a screen of awareness upon which the ever-moving, ever-changing tapestry of life and my experience of it keeps on being revealed, keeps on unfolding. If we can become aware that there is awareness always here, that's presence. That's a state of presence. That's a state of openness. Yeah. So it's a pointing towards something rather than an attempt to change our experience. I mean, it is a spiritual issue. Yeah? And many people are aware of mindfulness, but mindfulness only goes a certain way. Mindfulness tends to focus on the object of awareness. I'm talking about the source of awareness.
Let's open that up a bit. Because I think that there's a distinct difference between what you're sharing with the concept of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. There's also the condition that we human beings fall into, which is consistently live not in an aware state. We live in a subconscious state. That means we might be focusing on one thing, but we're not necessarily focusing on all of it. We're only focusing on minute parts of it. And I'm hearing you, and we're getting very philosophical, and I want our audience to be able to also feel that, you know, we're landing it on earth, because I think there's two pieces into this. One is a theoretical and a philosophical aspect of it, and experiential. And then I'm hoping that with our conversation, we also landed on, you know, experiences that people have every day, so they can bring it and fit it into to every day. So again, I just want to say what I'm hearing, and you tell me if I, you know, if it's accurate or not. There's a state that we pay attention to. And the attention at the time that I'm giving attention, like, for example, I'm giving attention to you, looking at your eyes, looking at your hair, listening to what you're saying. And that's what I'm paying attention to. There's also the subconscious arena that shows up as I'm paying attention to you, that has its own activation, whether I have different thoughts or emotions about what we say, about it all. So my attention is to something outside of me, which is you. Then it's all of these subconscious thoughts and emotions that are running in the background, which are triggered by what I'm paying attention to, which is you. And then there's something behind all of it, which is the area of awareness itself. And that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
And that part of that awareness, I'm also sensing that there has to be like a level of detachment from what I'm paying attention to. And then yet another level of detachment from what I get subconsciously bombarded with, which I have no control over in a sense, because it's there. And then to be in that state, and that state is a state. Do I also need to get detached from that state to experience that state? Or that state is a state that I live in, or I can honor?
It's a state you live in because you already live in it.
Mm-hmm. It's like the air that are just there.
Yes, or like the sky. We're so busy focusing on the clouds. We're so busy focusing on the weather, whether it's a stormy day or a tornado's coming or it's raining or it's sunny or windy. We're so busy focusing on that and what it's going to do to me and whether it's a threat to my survival or whether it's going to make me happy and feel good. That's like the content of our conscious awareness and our subconscious awareness. We're just busy being involved with that. Now, you can't get rid of the weather, but to realize that you are the sky, even though that feels like a detachment initially, I would say it's more of an expansion. It's a falling open. Falling open is not a detachment. There isn't a you that steps back and says, I'm here and there's something over there. And my being detached from it means that I can experience it or perceive it without being touched by it, without being hurt by it, without being bothered by it. That's detachment. Yeah, you remove yourself from the immediacy or intimacy of the felt sense of the experience. That's not what I'm talking about. The sky is one with the weather. It's intimate, but it is not limited to the weather. It is the open space within which weather happens. Just as consciousness is the open space within which our experience, our life, in which you and me appear. And this is something that through the process, I know it's a philosophical inquiry, but through the process of philosophical inquiry, we can get closer to it. When I say philosophical inquiry, because I do a lot of these dialogues, obviously this is what I do, this is what I teach, and this is the kind of dialogues that I have with people. But when we inquire in this way, it's not heady, it's not intellectual, it's very experiential. People come with their problems. Obviously, there has to be an interest in this deepening within. So most people are on a spiritual path anyway, whatever that spiritual path is, or at least looking inwards or with the longing to break free of the prison of ego mind, of ego self, come into a deeper state of presence with life. And so we explore all of that through inquiry, through dialogue, and gradually, because we're talking about specific issues that people are experiencing or specific experiences, either of opening or having an obstacle to that, we're actually coming closer to the experiential sense of it. And it's also an understanding. Like I say, it's not intellectual, but it does filter through the mind. Once we get it, once awareness gets it, it can start to turn itself towards itself, because that's the deepest longing of the soul. It's a coming home. It's a coming home to being. And the one thing we're not talking about yet here is the heart, is the role of the doorway of the open heart or the deep heart. And that's something that's very much part of what I'm talking about, which takes it out of the head or out of the intellect, out of the philosophy, and into the felt direct experience. So we talk very much about that, because the heart is the doorway to the deepest intimacy and acceptance of what is, which brings us into open awareness. It's not emotion. It's heart, which is slightly different.
It seems like it's a two-way street as I'm hearing you. So when, as we're talking about the philosophical aspect, obviously if we need to shift paradigm, we do need to go into the philosophical realm in order to be able to shift the paradigm. As you were talking, I remember many of the exercises that we have in the in the meditation aspect, which is if you're going to be looking at, for example, looking at a leaf, and then first you zoom in the leaf, and then you open your eyesight, which is then the whole tree, and then the whole background, and then at one point you kind of like, you know, you have your eyesight looking at all of it, whether it's the sky, everything, and the leaf is part of all of it. But this is an exercise that we do, like a visual exercise, in a sense, to do the expansion, like you were talking about. It's not a separation, it's an expansion, that you might start from something, but you expand your awareness, whether visual, auditory, and any of it, and you just keep adding to it. And I know a lot of people who meditate, they've probably done that type of a meditation to have that type of an experience. And then you, as I hear you, you're suggesting that as you open this type of awareness and you expand yourself in that, with that expansion, there's a level of connection that happens that is no longer through your thought process, but it's through your experiential experience. And then it goes, and then you kind of like connect with your heart to what is. And the more that you connect, it kind of like it reinforces each other. So the connection through the heart brings you to that experience of awareness and openness. And the experience of openness and awareness also connects you to your heart. Is that what I'm hearing? That it's a two-way relationship, that it keeps feeding itself?
I mean, yes, in the sense that once you enter the heart, the only place it goes to is open awareness. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking of ways or tools or practices to facilitate that, to bring an awareness to it, and that's wonderful. Let me, if I may, add something else to that.
Please.
Which is more of the direct approach that I'm offering, if you like. Let's talk about surrender, mm-hmm. because that's what I mean by the heart. Let's talk about surrender, which really fits in with something that you said at the beginning of this conversation, which was about welcoming everything. The main struggle, whether a person is on a spiritual path or not, and it doesn't really stop being a struggle on the spiritual path, sometimes it's highlighted, is to deeply be okay with what is. What is being the direct experience of what I'm experiencing. I'm not talking about circumstances, because very often people get confused, like, well, if I'm in an abusive relationship, does that mean I just have to accept it? That's not what I'm talking about. Yeah, you do what you have to do. If you're in an abusive relationship, or you're being threatened physically or emotionally, you walk away. Yeah, you change the circumstances to your capacity. I'm talking about your felt experience, your direct, most intimate experience, your feeling sense, your felt sense. The main obstacle is that, spiritual or otherwise, most people do not want to accept what they're feeling. It's either not spiritual enough, or makes them feel bad, or like they're not worthy enough, or not loved enough, not clever enough, not strong enough, not powerful enough. Most people only want the good feelings. Feeling strong, feeling powerful, feeling happy, feeling lucky, feeling successful, and so on. And it gets more and more subtle. What if we could surrender? That's what surrender is. Surrender the agenda for what I'm experiencing. Surrender the expectation. Surrender the image of how I should be or how I should be feeling or what should be happening. And this goes ever and ever more deeper, because in that we come more and more close to the intimacy with life. That surrender is not a passivity. It's not a resignation. It's not being weak. It brings us to such a sweet intimacy with life, which is a doorway into that openness. Yeah, we've got two ways in here. We've got the philosophical way of becoming aware of awareness, and we've got the path of surrender, which is the awareness of what I'm struggling with, what I'm arguing with. If we could let go of the argument with our experience, absolutely, 100%, even if I'm feeling angry, even if I'm feeling scared, even if I'm feeling tight, stop arguing with that.
I love what you just said.
The whole thing softens. The whole thing softens, and you've already fallen through the ego self into the heart of existence.
I love what you just said, which is let go of the argument. You say openness leads us to our true authority. And as you were talking about serenity, and you're accurate that most people's serenity does not appear to have authority. Serenity appears to be the passive aspect, and as if something else is the authority. And most people look at experience authority as taking charge in something, you know, and moving forward. And if you could bring the statement of yours, which is openness leads us to our true authority, and kind of bring it home with the conversation of serenity that you have, Could you share a little bit more about these two components, leading your own life in true authority while you are experiencing and allowing serenity?
Yes, thank you for that question. That's a good one. The authority, the inner authority that I speak of or point to, is not an authority from ego self. Mm-hmm. It's not an authority from who I think I am, the image I've created of myself according to my history and my experiences and my conditioning, my personal conditioning, family conditioning, social conditioning, cultural conditioning, and so on. It's not to do with that, because that's power over, and we know what that's like. It runs the world and it runs most people's lives. What we're talking about here is an inner authority that comes from the deepest. The deepest, when we rest in that, when we're rooted in that beingness that is always here, we are no longer subject to the narratives that arise in the mind, in the ego mind, that are based on our conditioning. There is no freedom other than being free of conditioning. But I don't know what percentage, but let's give it a figure. 99.9% of humanity is run by conditioning, and there's no freedom in that. And that's like being an automaton. The reaction, the response, is that comes from that narrow band of ego self is automatic. It's like karmic. It's based on your past karma, so it has its own momentum. To be free is to no longer give your allegiance to those narratives. That's the turning within that we're talking about. You stop giving allegiance to the narratives that arise that say, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm not worthy enough, or he's bad, they're wrong, that shouldn't be happening, it shouldn't be happening to me. All these, this sea of narratives that swirl around and we give so much credence to. When we stop giving our allegiance to that and start giving our allegiance to that which is always here as open awareness, which brings us, let's say, to a state of serenity, a serenity that hasn't got to do with not feeling anything, but simply being fully here as it is, then we can listen to something more true than the narratives of ego self, because they're not true. They're not true because they come and go. They're like waves on the ocean that keep on changing. Sometimes they may repeat themselves, but they're not true. We think they're true because we find ourselves in them. We derive our identity from them. In not deriving our identity from what happens or what doesn't happen, what I feel or what I don't feel, what I want or what I don't want, we can listen to a truer authority. We can listen to that authority from openness. It means we're not jumping to a conclusion about our experience. We're not taking a position about our experience. Mm-hmm. We're not living in a divided state. We're living from an open, undivided state. And in that is intelligence. The intelligence that comes from the natural impulse of life. We can't listen to natural intelligence when we're caught up in the duality of the ego mind. It's always dual. It'll keep on flipping from one polarity to another, or getting stuck in one polarity whilst in the subconscious is the other polarity. Yeah? This transcends the subconscious. Yeah? So we can listen to something more true. And that way we're guided to live more intelligently, more freely, more lovingly, with more presence. And so many more possibilities open up to us. But when it also stops the war. Yeah, it stops the inner war and it stops the outer war.
So when you talk about the connection with the intelligence of love, that moment by moment, you're talking about the going before, not before, the norm of the duality that a human brain consistently puts us through. So when you go before there, that's where you're talking about the intelligence, which is the ability to not only to be aware, but the ability to assess when you go before, looking at your duality, your different parts going at each other. Is that what I'm hearing?
If you're not pulled by the duality of the narratives, mm-hmm. by the duality of the mind, then something new moves you. Something closer to the intelligence of life that's always moving you anyway, but gets covered over by the ego mind and its rejection or grasping of its experience. It's a discovery, yeah? It's a discovery. It's not a formula for fixing your life. And it's not a formula for feeling good. But I can tell you, it's a freedom from the problems of ego mind, the problems of personal self that is always grasping for this or that. It doesn't take away that natural desire, but it takes away the problem of it.
Right. It seems like it's not a tool or a situation, it's a come from, it's a lens, it's where you look at life, where you look at being, where you feel the space you experience all of it, and the place you experience all of it when it's from openness, when you are in the flow of what it actually is, then you could be with all the experience that is. Now, in 1 minute, because our time is short now, And I'm loving this conversation, but if there's a way of coming to that openness, what is the path to practice to pour that awareness and that openness?
In 1 minute.
Yeah, in 1 minute.
I'll have to say surrender. I mean, everything we've spoken about is the path. It's a deep inquiry into the nature of who am I? Yeah. It's a deep inquiry into the nature of what am I giving my allegiance to? It can't be a recreation of the personality self. It's not about being a better self and learning a technique for self-esteem or self-awareness. It's an inquiry into what is my deepest longing? What do I really want? Not as a desire, but what is the soul's longing? What does it mean to come home? Am I willing to give myself to this? Looking at what am I actually giving my allegiance to in my everyday relationship with life? Am I willing to surrender the need to be right, the need to find comfort over truth, the need to, take up a position that keeps me in a divided state? Am I willing to surrender that so that I can fall into the deepest and listen from the deepest and abide in the deepest and know, not just intellectually, but energetically and viscerally, that I am not this separate self? That's not all I am. I am this separate self, and it appears in consciousness, which is the open awareness that I always am. Yeah, so it's more of a question rather than an answer.
It's an inquiring place to consistently come from.
Yes.
Amuda Ma, thank you so much for coming to the show and sharing with us your experience. Please, everyone, get Falling Open in a World Falling Apart. It's an amazing book. Where can they find you, Amuda?
My website, www.amodamar.com. Facebook, I have a public page, Amuda Ma. YouTube channel, Amuda Ma.
And you also teach, right?
No live events right now, but everything's online, and actually it's been more powerful online because we can have direct, very intimate interactions. So there's a whole series of events, meetings you can drop into, courses to go deeper. You can check it all out on my website.
Beautiful. Everyone, please go to amodamaw.com and also check out her book, Falling Open in a World Falling Apart. Thank you, all of you, for being with us. Thank you, Amuda, for being in with us and sharing your experience.
Thank you.
And for all of you who are out there, create an amazing world for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.